This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team at Prudential Now Realty, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how are you?
Can't believe how cold it's been lately.
Hey, pretty timely. Now, was that a timely show last weekend to do preparing your house for summer or what?
Mm-hmm.
It just came about 4 weeks earlier than we thought it might.
Oh, it's perfect. Love of the weather, Lance.
Yes, that is Mr. Tom Coyne here with Sterling Bank giving us the lending expert update. You're loving it?
Loving it. That 90 degrees, can't beat it.
You can't beat it. I mean, we got the garden dialed in. Things are actually starting to grow now. And so it's that time of year. Things are looking good. Lawns look great. So, yeah, it really, I tell you what, it extends our day for sure. I'd much rather show property when it's 7 o'clock and 75 degrees than dark and freezing. So
absolutely. Imagine all those boats going to be out of the water this weekend.
we're definitely enjoying some of Tri-Cities at its best for sure. Well, we always like to start off with a little bit of local real estate news, kind of keep track what's going on and happening in our community. Some of the things that come up and people face. Well, one of the things this week that the Richland City Council was looking at is Cadillac is really looking at expanding the hospital's campus. So one of the things they are needing to do that is they kind of envision a larger campus, including multiple medical office buildings. They've got some under construction already, moving from the 11-acre campus to a 14-acre campus immediately to the east. What happens, though, is they have Gothels, a section of Gothels, the street, that runs in between those parcels. One of the things they did is last month the city council had approved a development agreement with Cadillac to go ahead and guide future expansion. So they held a meeting and talked a little bit about vacating that right-of-way where Gothels runs, kind of having the city initiate that process and then going ahead and expanding the campus and allowing it. So there's a lot that goes into that, traffic studies. How will things route with the new road? No official decisions were made at the meeting, but they are going to reconvene and talk about that. They took public comments, so we might see some things around the campus down there in Central Richland the next year or so really starting to change. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that and what's going on there. As always, then, too, another thing before we go to our crazy real estate story, another thing I wanted to report on was Zillow, who we quote a lot on the show and is really becoming a powerhouse in websites in the real estate community.
Mm-hmm.
First quarter Zillow this year, they recorded record revenue of $39 million, up 71% over first quarter 2012.
Incredible.
We've identified them as kind of a mover and shaker up and coming in that industry, and it's really proving to be true. Also, first quarter, record all-time traffic. They had 52 million monthly unique visitors on mobile and web in April, and that's 63% year over year in April. And then they had 50 million monthly unique visitors in March of this year, and that was up 55% year over year. So definitely a huge powerhouse, a lot of consumers using Zillow. We use it to advertise all of our listings. It's a great outlet for people to get information. One of the things to note, too, that was crazy about it is they had 241 million houses viewed on Zillow via a mobile device in April.
Wow.
Okay, so that really goes to show that over half of the visits, 55%, now come from a mobile device.
If I got the Zillow app on my iPhone.
It's
a great app.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's really cool. It doesn't matter if you travel. If you have that app, if you go to Seattle or you go to Houston or travel, I do the same thing. You pull it up. It's really cool to be driving through a neighborhood and then getting those, they call them zestimates of values around you very quickly.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's a really cool app. A lot of consumers are searching that way. Making sure that you're properly being seen on that website is a huge, huge deal. We pay a lot of extra money to make sure that happens for our clients. And so it's good to see that it's responding that way in the marketplace for sure, really becoming a force. Now, I tell you what, if you want to see a crazy house, it looks like a hotel, is what I was thinking, our celebrity house for sale of the week, and we've got former NBA Rookie of the Year, Mitch Richmond, you might remember him from the Lakers days, putting his Calabasas home on the market. He's had it since 2004. For $9.5 million. This thing is 10,000 square feet, and you should see the pictures of this place. I really thought it looked like a hotel. You've got a sports bar in the house. You've got basketball court, water slide. I mean, it looks like a hotel or fraternity house off of the Vegas Strip.
Well, given athletes' legal issues with substances, why not have the sports bar in your house?
Why not just have the bar in your house? Never have to leave and get in trouble that way. So it really is, it's an incredible thing to go look at. Very fun to click through those pictures. So if you definitely, if you just Google Mitch Richmond home for sale, it'll come right up. Great, great pictures of that. Crazy to see what 11,000 square feet Rambler. It was one level. I mean, it spread out. It looked like it took like two blocks. I mean, it spread out. It was just really, really incredible. So fun to see. It's reported that he's been part of a minority investment group. Sad to report on this myself, but helping the NBA ownership relocation committee keep the Kings in Sacramento. So maybe selling the house for $10 million gives a little extra push to that to that investment. So that is our celebrity house of the week. What we wanted to talk about this week, Tom and I have been talking a lot recently. You know, we always like to take what's going on in the current market and then bring those topics to the show and what people have been doing. We both ran across a lot of clients recently, and we were talking about this off the show. We have a lot of great clients that we've helped, and we were talking the other day and said, hey, you know what? I've got this client, and with interest rates where they are, you know, they've bought four rental houses in the last 3 years. And so I said, gosh, let's talk a little bit about what that looks like, you know, what that looks like for our listeners. If someone was interested in doing that, I've had rentals myself. Tom, I know you have rentals. It seems like you're in the business and you just start collecting property like that sometimes.
Kind of like Monopoly.
Kind of like Monopoly, but you're doing it every day. That's what you do. You get a knowledge base built up there, and it just kind of happens.
It's so easy to cash flow rentals right now with how low rates are.
And that's what really brought me up. Said, let's take a look and talk a little bit about buying rentals. Or maybe I've had a lot of clients recently that have turned their existing home into a rental and then capitalized on those rates to move up to their new home. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I wanted to talk about first before I kind of delve into factors to consider. What's the money look like on some of these? There's different requirements for an investment purchase versus primary residence purchase. So what does that look like on your end, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Lance, as you can imagine, over the last few years, there's been a lot happening in the mortgage industry, and investment properties have changed, or the financing guidelines for investment properties have changed dramatically. So you used to be able to get in, I remember, 5% down on investment property, and now the industry standard is around 20% or so. And it's easy to look at it like this. If someone went through hard times, and they had their primary residence and maybe two investment properties, and they had a choice of only making payments on one of them, which one are they going to pay?
Your house you live in.
Absolutely.
So that's what happened and caused a lot of the defaults were on those other properties.
Absolutely. A lot of the foreclosures came on investment properties, and it makes sense. People were using the rents they were getting from these properties to be able to float the house payments on their primary residence just to be able to stay in there. So investment properties are viewed at as a higher risk by lenders than an owner-occupied property.
Yeah, when you explain it that way, it makes a lot of sense. So One of the things that we've done for our clients that's very popular, rents very well, easy way to get into it, is a lot of people end up buying, you know, just kind of your classic three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage, Rambler, family, you know, small family style home. And those generally, we can find those in really good shape in Pasco, Kennewick, and even a couple in Richland. I ran a couple reports to see. You can find those fairly new right now for around $140,000 to $155,000. And when you look at interest rates, even on investment property, if you're looking at interest rates, even on investment property like that right now, you're just going to be in that rough range of that number's probably going to have, that number's probably going to have a three in front of it. I mean, there are interest rates on investment properties right now in the threes. You have to contact your local lender and run a lot of scenarios. There's a lot that comes up, credits and everything. But you're going to be looking at that, and you're going to be in those threes. And that is with rental rates for a house like that. And these are generalizations. But I have properties in that range that rent for around $1,250 a month. $1,250 to $1,300 a month for a property like that. And if you look at what your payments on that, like I said, there's a lot that goes into it. I'm not a lender, and even a lender, you have to go into their office and speak to them. But those, I can tell you that those, in particular, I've got mortgage payments on those that are under $800 a month.
So you're making quite a bit.
You can be cash flowing, I mean, after you pay property taxes and interest and everything, but those properties right out of the gate, and we are not talking rundown properties. We're talking about nice properties that are basically almost rental ready. And so you can be cash flowing in those properties between $350 to $400 a month. And so right now, I mean, it works so well with the rates where they're at. And there still is a demand for those type of rentals. So that's the good part, and that paints the rosy picture. But one of the things is I know from having rentals, there's another side of it that you need to consider. Because if that was the only part of the conversation, we'd all be running out and buying, you know, tons of these rentals. So there's a couple things that I wrote down that I said I've known from having my rentals and that the listeners should know about. One of the first things that I wrote down is when you are looking at doing this is being realistic about the home inspection. That was one of the big items that I put down there. One of the things that you have to evaluate, for instance, is does this property need a new roof in 5 years? What is the heating and air conditioning system like? You know, I've had a house that was, you know, 12, 13 years old before that was a rental, and we had to replace the heating and air system in it last year and put a new one in. Well, you know, at $350 a month on your cash flow, it takes quite a while to make up for a new heating and air system. Say it runs $4,000, you're looking at 10 or 12 months, you know, almost a year's worth of your cash flow to pay for a bigger ticket item like that. So when you're getting that home inspection on a property you're considering as a rental property, you need to pay really close attention to that because it's going to be very hard to recoup those costs later on in a rental market like that. So that's one of the big, big factors. Now, kind of taking a little bit step back, another thing that kind of led me to do this show today is that a lot of these, it's kind of crazy to think about, but the rates are so great right now with interest rates that a lot of these rental properties, so say your goal is long-term savings or building up of equity versus immediate cash flow. A lot of these rental properties, when I run the numbers on them, you can almost break even on a 15-year amortization with a rental property. So to think that you could not only, and I tell you what, folks, I mean, people tell you this all the time, and your parents tell you this all the time. 15 years goes by really quick.
Yeah.
And you know, I even can't believe it, you know, with my own kids and what happens and stuff. So one of the things about this is, what would you be willing to do for 15 years? So if we talked about this project today, you came into our office and said, Lance, you know, let's go look for two or three of these investment properties. You know, you're right. What would you be willing? Would you be willing to collect rents for 15 years? Would you be willing to get a newer type property? do drive-bys, check up on it. There is going to be some annoyance, and we're going to go through some of the annoyance factor as we finish up the show. But if you said, if I said, okay, great, in 15, here's your 15-year mortgage, you're breaking even, this is the sweat equity that you're willing to put in this project. At the end of the 15 years, we've got $150,000 houses. Let's just say that the appreciation is not fantastic. It's just 2% a year. You know, and we look at the end of 15 years, those $150,000 houses that you bought, you say we do two of them, let's just say they're worth $175. We really screwed it up. And they are just over 15 years, they were only worth $175. At the end of 15 years, you're going to have two assets that is worth
$350,000
at the end of 15 years. Paid for. Plus, you're going to have, if you talk to your CPA, I'm sure they're going to talk to you about tax advantages along the way. And at the end of the deal, what's it going to look like and mean to your financial situation to have assets of $350,000 paid for? And that's on two pretty simple deals that we could put together a system and show folks how to do. So we talked about the home inspection. I know we're gonna run out of time today. I get real passionate about this project.
I'm just letting you roll.
Because I do it myself, and so I get real passionate about this project, and it's building wealth for clients. We do it with clients right now, and it is fantastic. I mean, these are the clients that after 5-7 years, it's been such great. We buy properties. We go to lunch with these folks. I mean, they come into town. They check on their property. So it gets me super, super excited. Plus, I know that there are 22 to 27-year-old, I call them kids now, I shouldn't, but, you know, 22 to 27-year-old folks, and anybody can do this at any age when you do it. But I'm just saying, I get really jazzed up to think I could take a 23-year-old, I could put them into a house like this, and then when they're 37 or 38, they could have a couple of these houses paid for.
Lance, I had my first rental at 20.
Yeah, and so it's really exciting that we could take folks, put them into this, plug them into the system, and make it happen. Before we go to break, I'm going to talk about one other thing, and that's vacancy factor. Mm-hmm. You are not going to have that rental full 100% of the time. If you do your budgeting on every month being rented, you're gonna have a nasty surprise for you when you don't. What happens is, for instance, say you budget for a certain amount of cash flow. Say the $350 cash flow example that we talked about. You know what? If you end up with a house being vacant for a month and you lose that $1,250 that we talked about, if you lose 1 month in turnover, say one tenant leaves and you got to clean the place up and get a new tenant in, if you lose 1 month of the turnover there, that's going to eat up 5 months of your cash flow. So factoring in a vacancy factor, if we look at Tri-Cities as a whole right now, you could use a factor of 85% occupancy. It's generally higher than that, but I always kind of go on the cautious side. If you use a factor of 85% right now, that would help you kind of guesstimate, okay, based upon it being, you know, a month or two empty, here's what it looks like to my financial situation. So budget with the vacancy factor. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk to Tom a little bit more about financing in these situations, and we're going to talk about three or four more tips to consider on the way to building your wealth through real estate.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking about owning and operating investment property. Tom and I have been talking about properties we've bought, what we've done personally, what we're doing for clients right now. There's a group of people out there that realize that rates are ridiculous with a capital R. I think I said stupid on the show before, but I tell my kids not to use that word. So I'm talking about the best way. So ridiculous, we'll stick with ridiculous with a capital R. Using those rates, not just for your personal house, but for one or two investment properties. Many people are moving up right now to their personal home and keeping their existing home as a rental. But it's not all roses, you know? It's not always easy. There's some things that come up. That's the other side that we're trying to talk about. We're in the business. We encourage it. We do it ourselves. But we'd like to point out what you need to think about. And then, Tom, on the lending side, what else comes into play when you're looking at this?
Well, Lance, you just mentioned that a lot of people will convert their primary residence into a rental and buy a new primary residence. It happens all the time, and we see it a lot. Now, one of the things we really look at is we want to make sure that this new property, if they're truly buying the new property as an owner-occupied, that it really is going to be an owner-occupied property. And right, because they don't want somebody saying that and then actually turn it into another rental.
Right, and then that's going to lead down to a road of fraud and everything else.
Exactly. So we have to make sure it makes sense, really. And we're going to look at the house they're in right now, and then we're going to look at the new home and say, does this make sense that they're moving up to this new place? Now, let's say they live in a $300,000 home in Canyon Lakes, and then they're telling us that they're going to buy one of the Alphabet homes down in Richland, and that's going to be their new primary residence. We're not going to buy it.
Right. I know what you mean.
It will not go through underwriting. So,
right.
We always use common sense in that scenario.
Yes.
Is the new one truly going to be owner-occupied? Now, investment property financing is definitely available. We do it all the time. It just requires, main thing, more down payment, a little bit more money in the bank. For a purchase on a one-unit investment property, you have to put 15% down. Now, that's if someone only has between one and four financed properties.
Gotcha.
Now, let's say they want to buy a duplex or fourplex. Then they have to put 25% down. Okay, now, all this changes when they own 5 to 10 financed properties. You're going to take 5% off of that. So, if you have 5 to 10 financed properties on a single-family purchase, you got to put 20% down. For a multifamily 2 to 4 unit, they're going to have to put 30% down at that point.
Gotcha.
Now, this is all for purchase, and then it changes again for refi. So there's lots of guidelines and parameters to follow, and it's going to be case by case, and I'll be able to tell someone within just a few minutes, talk to them of what they'd have to put down. Now, another thing to keep in mind is, let's say someone has their home, and they're looking to just buy a few investment properties like we've talked about. They need to have 6 months reserves for all properties that they own.
Gotcha.
Now, reserves are money that you have in the bank that you're not using, but you have available. Like, let's say I lost my job today. How many months of payments do I have in the bank?
Right.
Like emergency fund.
Exactly. So 1 month reserves will count for 1 month's payment, essentially. So 401ks, count as reserves, IRAs, stocks, mutual funds. It doesn't have to be just checking in savings accounts. So a lot of times people meet these reserve requirements by their 401k, and maybe they have a large sum of money in there, and that will satisfy it. But definitely keep that in mind that up and above the down payment of, say, 20%, they also have to have 6 months reserves for all the properties.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And that's good financial sense. In fact, that's I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but just as financial sense for owning a rental, not even a bank requirement. I wasn't even thinking that you were going to tell me on that side of it, so I'm glad you did. I had put down, and that kind of leads to, I put down one of the biggest hidden costs can be repairs after vacancy. So good financial sense to have that reserves anyway in case you're having to make repairs and do stuff like that. Because when you're doing that, you're going backwards at twice the speed of light, not just once, because now we don't have the rental income, and we're spending money to make repairs. So it's like twice as bad as just being vacant.
You know, if it were me and someone came to me and they have just enough for the down payment, and let's say we didn't even have this reserve requirement, which we do, I wouldn't recommend someone goes and buys a home, spends every penny they have on the down payment, and now they absolutely have to have that rented out every month. Because imagine if something happens, the tenants don't pay their payment, there's some sort of repair that needs to be made, you're adding so much extra stress to the family on how do we make this payment.
You're 100% right. Good financial sense, knowing what can happen makes a huge, huge difference. And I wrote down here, I put you can burn through $1,000 in carpet and paint and drywall repair.
One visit to Lowe's.
Without even blinking. Yeah, I mean, so one visit. So we know how quickly it can go. One of the things I also wrote down that has always helped us, and, you know, kind of just a little tip here I put on the side, is how important the move-in, move-out sheet. As a tenant and a landlord, so this is good advice for anybody just renting a place out there. As a tenant and a landlord, you need to pay very close attention to this. So as a tenant even, so somebody listening to the show that's not ready to buy yet, this is good advice as a tenant. That is not just something to be taken lightly. You need to go through that vacant unit. You need to mark down in detail what the defects are the day you took possession of that. because that is going to be what is used to grade you when you move out a year from now and they look at your security deposit. And they're looking at that security deposit. If you have signed documentation, like I said, it adds up pretty quick. If there's stains in the carpet, you know, nicks on the walls and that stuff. As a tenant, make sure you're notating that down, because when you go to move out, that can add up very quickly and burn through your security deposit versus getting it back.
Or if it goes above your deposit.
Even if it went above your deposit. So you need to be very, very clear about that. And how to use that. And then same thing as a landlord, making sure if that unit is in pristine condition. We even got to the fact on some of ours where we would take pictures of it. So if there were issues upon move-in or issues that a tenant was accepting, we would always take pictures of that so we had a visual reference of how things were also.
Maybe have the tenant sign that picture acknowledging they saw it at the same time.
Yep, definitely. It's just good, good business practice. The more that you can do up front is a huge one. Another thing that I had written down is factoring into that budget business licenses and professional fees. In general, some of the stuff we've talked about, preparing an accurate lease, looking at your tax liabilities and how this affects your tax bill, many times consulting with an attorney and a CPA, those costs need to be factored into that budget. Also, there are going to be licenses that are required. The different cities, if you have rentals, might require different licenses. And if you have different LLCs for different properties or different structures recommended to you by your accountant and your attorney, those bills will increase a little bit to facilitate the way that those are formed, the way those companies are formed. So having a line item in there for professional fees and business licenses makes a huge, huge difference. And the last thing I kind of wanted to wrap up with on my end is looking at your cost of your money and your time. A lot of times people chase real estate because they're chasing bigger returns, bigger percentages and bigger returns in the sweat equity. One of the things that you need to really look at is say, okay, realistically, if this is going to cost me 5 to 6 or 5 to 7 hours of my week or my month, what is that 5 to 7 hours worth? To me, what else could I be doing? Could it be income I could be earning at my job? What's that worth? Kind of figuring out what your hourly rate is, you know, and then factoring that hourly rate into the budget to say, does this make sense? You know, am I diversifying? Am I looking for bigger returns? Because sometimes there's projects and there's projects I wish I would have done this on, and I didn't. I've made that mistake already. And so there's times where now we really take a hard look at that time factor, what that's worth, and then calculating that back into your return. Because sometimes you can just stick something, you know, you can talk to your financial advisor. We have Garrick on the show all the time. Sometimes you could just do no work, stick that money in something, 3 to 4%. No time.
Bada bing.
You know, where maybe you chase an 8, 9% return, but you've got 10 hours or 15 hours a month involved in that. It just might not make sense. So I really stress that people look at the time factor and the cost of money and look at that.
And watch the movie The Money Pit.
Very nice, McKay. Very nice, McKay.
And one thing I want to point out, I hope we didn't scare anyone away when we said that it requires 20% down. A lot of times what people will do is they'll use the equity they have in their primary residence, and we'll do some sort of a home equity loan or a cash-out refi. And they can use that equity that they've built already in their primary residence to be able to accumulate investment property.
Yeah, so there's different ways and different strategies, and like you said, it's very tailored to the individual. You can always come to us, and we'll put you in touch with Tom so he can talk the dollar figures. Once that is worked out on his end, we work with the clients to find the actual property that's going to work well for them in this, and it is a lot of fun. If you couldn't tell by our excitement today on the show, we'd love to do this for folks. My cell number is 727-8977, or you can always hit us up at kenmoreteam.com. And Tom, your contact info?
430-1305 or tomcoinhomeloans.com.
Perfect, and we will be right back here next Saturday morning
on News Talk 870.